Bradley Beal out for the Wizards in the bubble.
And Adam Silver's worried that the bubble might pop because of positive tests.
Plus, in honor of Pat Mahomes, who would you give a 10-year deal to in the NBA? Yes, it is the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Let's do this.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast that, yes, writes their own tweets covering everything you want to know about the association and the NBA's restart. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales, at @RedArmy_John on Twitter, and I host Locked On Celtics.
Plus, we are joined by new Locked On Wizards host, Renee Washington. Renee, thanks for joining the show today with us.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
No, we're thrilled to have you on. This is your first appearance on anything Locked On, right?
Absolutely. You guys are my first show, so I'm excited.
There we go. Wednesday show, the best show here. So we're excited about it, and it's kind of perfect timing. And this happened, I promise, before we had like you ready to come on with us. But the big news, I think, of the NBA right now is no Bradley Beal for the Washington Wizards in Orlando with the restart. You know, you've seen a number of players kind of dropping out for the Nets here. They're down six of, you know, their bigger names with everything. If you're looking at the Wizards, if you're looking at the Nets, if you're looking at some of these other teams that are kind of losing guys, is there a reason they're there? Is there stuff for them to play for?
You know, hearing the news about Bradley Beal opting out of going to Orlando was very surprising. And I know we talked about this even before the show. Just everything I've been hearing about around Bradley Beal was that he was focused on Orlando, focused on getting back. You know, even the trade rumors and about where he was going to be next, his big focus was just going down to Orlando. Even for Wizards fans and, you know, the Wizards organization, everything right now is just trying to get into the playoffs. You know, they're right on the cusp. They're right there. It's so important to have those small victories, right? When you're a team like the Wizards, like the Nets, that's trying to find a way to get back to being a top team, forget in the league and the conference in itself, you know, the first step is really just be a playoff contender. And so for those teams, I think that's more what they're playing for. You know, of course, everyone's always playing for a championship, right? You know, you're not going into this, going in saying, oh, you know, we'll just make it to the first round. But I think for a team like the Wizards, the Nets that are right there, it's about getting into the playoffs and making some noise to hopefully have some momentum that your franchise can build off of moving forward.
This would be pretty important for them too, because there's been a lot of, you know, talk, smoke, whatever you want to say about Beal potentially leaving the Wizards. He couldn't be traded this season from the extension that he signed, but in 2 years, he's either a free agent, but it feels like he could get moved before that. John, I'll throw it to you here. Like, it seems like them getting into the playoffs and being in playoff contention, like you were saying, Renee, is at least kind of important for, I don't know, maybe retaining him potentially.
Well, I don't think we're looking at a situation where he's looking at the guys around him and saying, huh, I wonder if we make a run in this bubble, that's going to be the difference between me staying and me going. I think if anything, if we're going to go down that road, I would rather sit back and say, well, instead of me, Bradley Beal playing, why don't we see what some of these other guys can do? And let's use this as a way to judge what the role players around me and John Wall, when he comes back, what are they going to be like? What's Rui Hachimura going to look like as like the main focus? Can he handle this little, it's almost like a little mini playoff run for Rui Hachimura to go and be the guy and face the pressure of being the guy and learning the lessons of being the focal point of an offense and having a defense geared towards you and stopping you. And then taking those lessons out of these eight games, going through the offseason saying, okay, this is how I can improve. And I think that would do Washington a little bit more justice than having Bradley Beal go out there dropping 45 and Washington losing.
He'd be dropping like 45 on that team, I think, in this playoff bubble, right?
he would need to. I mean, I think what John is saying is actually a great point. You know, this is an opportunity to see what the franchise has to offer. What can these other players, these role players that have been the supporting cast, Bradley Beal and John Wall, you don't have your number one and two guys there. Now what? What do you do? The all eyes are on you. At this point, it's, you know, you're 8 games out. You're just trying to see if you can get into the playoffs. What are you going to do? Sink or swim? And see how they're going to handle this opportunity to, when there's, as we're talking about, the Wizards, the Nets, these teams that have literally no expectations going into the return of the NBA, that everyone's already counting you out, unfortunately, you know? So now you have the opportunity to go into it and just play, see what happens, and just hope that you can come out of this and have a strong push in the, to the postseason.
Yeah, you know, I think both of you highlight something that's kind of important to keep in mind, is I think a lot of people look at some of these teams, the Nets, and like, who's on the Nets right now, right? And you've got other teams that are losing guys, and it's like, what do they have to play for? Why were, you know, the Suns invited to this? Why were some of these other teams invited to this? When there's, you know, there's a health risk and a serious one in that for going to this, but I think for a lot of these guys, there's still a lot of things to play for. Put aside your concerns about the NBA restarting, all of that. It is what it is. It's happening. You know, even a couple of the Pelicans were talking about it. Brandon Ingram in particular said, like, these 8 games in 5 weeks that they're all together in Orlando for are important for team chemistry, growing for a group of guys that are going to, in theory, be together for a really long time. And this is a really big growth opportunity for them. It's also for guys like Hachimura and some of these other younger guys on other teams to really kind of prove themselves over it and have a chance to, like, highlight their ability.
You know, this is almost like the concept of fraternity hazing, where you put guys through the trials and tribulations, and you do it in a way that's supposed to foster this, like, camaraderie. If you can get through this, then you're one of us, and we have this thing, this bond forever. This is almost like a form of hazing for these NBA players, especially these teams at the end. You go in there, you go through these trials, you go through I don't want to trivialize it. These are real risks that are involved, but the concept is you get through this. And Brad Stevens, I've heard Brad Stevens talk about it, and Celtics on our Zoom calls have echoed it. It's the team that finds, to put it in Brad Stevens' terms, great joy, the team with the grit, the team that can come together over the course of this month and a half to 3 months and stick together, find that thing that kind of coalesces them and that team chemistry. Those are the teams that are going to have an advantage over some of the other teams that might not like each other. And I think that's something that these teams that are struggling to form an identity, that's something that they can find in this situation.
Are you speaking from, like, personal experience on the hazing?
No.
Hazing is not allowed.
No. I never experienced any sort of rookie hazing, fraternity hazing, or anything like that.
There we go. No drink pledge or anything like that, right?
Theoretically, I know what they're talking about.
You know, it's such a good point that you bring up, though, because that's something that when we look at championship teams across all sports, like, I remember even watching when the 49ers and Chiefs sort of preparing for the Super Bowl and watching championship teams like the Warriors, like, you know, over the years that we've seen, even the Raptors and their run last year in championship, a lot of these moments like this, these defining moments, are what helps prepare a team for a championship run. You know, it's in these moments where no one's really paying attention. We don't see what's going on as much in the locker room as these guys are, you know, losing. Bottom, you know, struggling just to make it into the playoffs. But how are they recovering from that? How are they responding to that? And that's where that character and that grit to be a champion really is born, because it's one thing to be losing and you continue to just go into it and you can't find your way out to break that cycle. It's another thing to be a team that's, okay, finding those small victories, making the most of it, and finding a way, like in this situation, maybe it's team chemistry, like you said. You know, maybe it's having this opportunity while you're in Orlando to start bonding more, because you're all there in Orlando and you're in the bubble and there's nowhere else to go. So it's finding ways to continue to move forward even when others on the outside can't see the progress. So I think, John, as you're touching on, that is a great benefit of Orlando. They'll be locked in Orlando and have a chance to grow as a team for the future, not for this year, but for the future.
But here's one example that I can provide that highlights that. It's the Team USA prior to the season, from the Celtics perspective, that had Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Marcus Smart all on the team. It was basically the Celtics Team USA. Mm-hmm. And they've all spoken about that prior, you know, throughout the early part of the season. They said that that was a real kind of head start for them, chemistry-wise, and why on the court they were able to get along so well so quickly as members of the Boston Celtics. So I think there is some kind of level of precedent for this kind of concept.
I mean, that's how you got the Miami Heat super team, was from a Team USA run and them kind of hanging out. And look, one, they were all really good players too, but I think it kind of adds to that sort of thing. And this mental aspect of all of this that we've all said is going to be really important. It's also probably a big part of the reason why you're not seeing more players back out of playing. They're all usually kind of willingly going to all of this, because even if we don't see the benefits of playing, we're not players, they're kind of perceiving this and experiencing this very differently than us. And that's why you're seeing a team filled with players like the Nets going, even if, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot there for them to play for. So we're going to get some games, we're hoping, and see the bubble here in Orlando, but there is a chance that it could burst. We'll talk about that coming up here on the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. But before we do that, got to mention rockauto.com, head sponsor of today's show. Look, whether you're a do-it-yourselfer, whether you're trying to save just a little bit of money, or you're restoring a classic, it's basically impossible to find all of the parts you're looking for your car at any of those big chain storefronts. There's too many makes, there's too many models, there's too many specific trims, things like that. The clerk's not going to be able to help you out because they don't know your specific car. But if you go to rockauto.com, they've got a unique online catalog that is remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle. You can choose the specific brand you want, the specifications, and then the best part is when you look at the prices. You know, you can have mechanics get parts cheaper than you can, but at rockauto.com, they have reliably low prices, the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. You guys have heard me mention this. I am restoring a classic car here in New Orleans. I wanted a stock radiator for it. I found a stock radiator from 1976 for the car on rockauto.com. It's not easy to do that. It was really, really easy there, and it had the best price of anywhere that I had looked. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So all of us across the Locked On network have been talking about the NBA's bubble, and some of us are for it, some of us are against it. Whatever it is, it's happening, right? But Adam Silver came out and spoke a little bit about how maybe the bubble bursts, and let's play the audio for you right now.
And so we won't be surprised when they first come down to Orlando if we have some additional players to test positive. What would be most concerning is once players enter this campus and then go through our quarantine period, then if they were to test positive or we would have any positive tests, we would know we would have an issue. And so in terms of our level of confidence, again, when we set down this path in terms of coming back in Orlando, Florida was not experiencing case levels at the rate they are now, and Orange County, where Orlando is, was not. But on the other hand, we designed this campus environment so that we could be as protected as possible from the environment around us. So on paper and dealing with our experts, this should work. But we shall see. I'm confident, based on the positive cases we're seeing from our players and the general public around the country, that it will be safer on this campus than off this campus, in part because we're going to be doing daily testing. And incidentally, when our players are not playing, which is the vast majority of the time they're there, they will be observing physical distancing and wearing masks. So it's a very protected environment. But again, this virus has humbled many. And so I'm not going to express any higher level of confidence than we're following the protocols, and we hope it works as we designed it.
All right, John, Renee, hearing that, do you feel more or less confident about the NBA restarting in Orlando first and foremost? Let's ask that.
Well, I'll say I feel like Adam Silver is reflecting my own kind of feelings about the bubble. I've expressed confidence in it throughout this whole thing. However, as more positive tests roll in across Florida, and as you see more tests, positive tests, and teams shutting down their facilities around the NBA, just start to, it just erodes at your confidence. And I think what Silver is saying is the same thing that I've been saying and a lot of us have been saying here. We expected this so far. And the whole point of the bubble is to find out who has it, quarantine them. Some of these guys aren't going, you know, like Torian Prince and those guys, they're not going. But the guys who are were the ones that are now clean. And the whole point is that everyone is scrubbed clean and put in the bubble, and they should be fine if everybody does what they're supposed to do. But it depends on everybody doing what they're supposed to do. And we've seen throughout the country that the places where people flout the rules and aren't doing what they're supposed to do, they screw things up. And that's certainly going to be possible in this bubble. And I think that's the thing that Silver is afraid of. He's afraid of somebody screwing up and not following the rules.
Yeah, that's a great point. And honestly, John, just to echo your thoughts and add to it a little bit more, I know it's tough. You know, we as sports fans selfishly want sports to come back by any means. But also from the human side, as I'm watching the reports that are coming out, even things like the fact that a number was released, it was a couple weeks ago. So that number, of course, has changed by now. But a couple weeks ago, I saw a report that Orlando airport employees, like 260 of them, give or take, tested positive. Then I'm seeing reports that the staff that's going to be working in the bubble. So although the players will be quarantined in the bubble, there are people that are coming in and out. So there's just, with all these precautions that are taking place to ensure that players are giving all that they're going to need right there in Orlando, they don't have to go anywhere, everything's in the bubble. You know, there are still concerns because we're dealing with an unknown. You know, the coronavirus is not something that we've ever seen before. And watching how COVID is spreading in such a way, it's terrifying. So the question I know we were talking about is, what happens if a big name player tests positive? What happens if LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, one of these big Giannis, someone tests positive right now? And no knock on the players that have tested positive. But, you know, I think right now we're seeing a lot more role players. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie's a big name, of course. But, you know, looking across the board, it hasn't been a top player from a championship caliber team right now. Celtics, Bucks, Lakers, Clippers. So I think that's the question I'm even wondering. What happens if someone does test positive? Then what do we do? You know, I think that's going to really determine a lot on the future of the NBA's return in itself.
No, and it's interesting because I definitely think if a big name guy tests positive, it's going to sway kind of public opinion, which I feel is already against this even more so. And maybe that kind of forces the league a little bit. But, you know, they've been kind of, you know, like a train going forward in this, and it's nothing that's going to stop it. My thing on this is, and John, you and I and this show for the past couple of weeks, and you said it, we are like, yes, the NBA should do this. We feel confident they can potentially pull it off. Look, you know, all of these tests are happening in their home markets. Maybe it's even safer potentially inside the bubble. Where guys can't go to a club in Serbia, for example, and some of this other stuff. So, you know, maybe that makes things a little less risky because there's risk everywhere where they are. I would have liked to have heard Adam Silver be a little more confident in this. Like, this is the guy who's kind of staking everything on this and is like, yeah, the bubble might burst and maybe it falls apart and we have to stop the season. Like, you know, it's like kind of the pilot being like, oh, yeah, maybe the plane crashes. Like, that's not what you want to hear them say when you get on, right?
Right, right. When the air bags drop out of the ceiling and he's like, well, guys, you know, I'm like 60% confident that I'm going to land this plane. That's not going to be great. Look, as far as I don't think it should matter who tests positive. And the NBA can't allow that to matter. And I don't think that's going to happen. There's too many, first of all, too many people are going to know that if it's a big name, and I won't say one of the big names, I don't want to jinx anybody, but if it's one of the big names, how many people are going to know that big name tests positive? And if that player plays, that's going to get out. And what's going to be worse if they allow big name player to play, he plays and then spreads it. That's intentional. That's not only intentional, that's potentially criminal. And if you allow a player with an infectious disease to go out there and play, spread it, and especially when you're talking about deeper in the playoffs when families are allowed into the bubble and players will be going back from those games and spending time with their families. Who knows what that's going to spread. If anything happens with the NBA's knowledge and somebody else gets sick, and heaven forbid that person worse, the NBA is liable criminally, I would say. So they have to play it completely straight. Does it matter who tests positive? You test positive, you out, you follow the protocol, and until you pass that protocol, you don't come back in.
Yeah, I mean, their testing and all of that has to be like completely above the board on everything. Also, like, I don't think they would do anything to endanger like the health, you know, in any capacity of any of the players. So I'm less worried about that. So let me pose this question. The NBA's got a lot at stake for making this happen. Like, we know the financial implications on it. John, you and I, again, have joked about this when they're like, oh, there's a greater cause than this. And we're like, no, the greatest cause they've got is money here. If they have to shut it back down, say there's an outbreak, and look, you see FC Dallas having to back out of the MLS tournament because 10 players and a coach were infected with this, and it kind of throws everything into disarray. Say the NBA shuts down. One, is it like a doomsday? You know, it's not going to be a complete doomsday level event of like there's no more NBA, but there's serious ramifications. And then what?
I mean, you talk about Dallas. I saw the same thing. Orlando and the NWSL and women's soccer had to back out too. I mean, there are teams, whole teams backing out. As we talked about, there are practice facilities being closed. So we have already been seeing a lot. And I know even before this interview came out, there was another report about Adam Silver kind of being hesitant and on the fence. I know NBA reporter Malika Andrews tweeted it out. And I saw that a little while ago, a week or so ago. The days overlap in coronavirus, so bear with me. I'm sorry. and just saying, like, Adam Silver's unsure about, you know, really what's going to happen with the bubble, you know, and the safety ramifications around it. So, you know, I think that the question is, and we all know the financial risks. We all know how much the league itself is putting into all this and how much is really at stake here. But it really is going to come down to if you have players. It depends on the numbers. If you have a lot of players that are testing positive, is it worth it to continue at that point? Is it worth it to continue to try to move that train along if the train's on fire? You know, so it's just a matter of, I think we're really going to see how much these, you know, the front offices, the NBA, you know, Adam Silver, how much are they going to put stock into the players versus the league and the financial side? Because it is going to be an ethical decision if we have, I don't know what the number, can't even think of a number, but if it's a large number that's continuously growing and it seems like the bubble's not working, you know?
Yeah, I think the line to me isn't necessarily the number. The line is isolated cases versus outbreak. And I'm gonna repeat myself because I've said this probably on 10 different podcasts by this point, but you could have 10 cases and have it be isolated. You can also have 10 cases and have it be an outbreak. So the number I don't think is necessarily what's important. It's are 10 people positive and it's one each on 10 different teams. And you have to maybe figure out how that got into 10 different teams, but it's still only one and it's not spreading. Or is it one case that has infiltrated maybe a team hotel or a specific facility or a specific team. And it's very obvious that one person caught it and has since spread it. And that's going to be the most disturbing because these guys, if it becomes a spread, then it's going to show that a lot of people didn't take this as seriously as they should. Because even amongst teams, when you're playing ping pong or playing golf, you're supposed to be socially distanced. You're supposed to be wearing a mask. So there should not be a spread. And if there is, then somebody didn't take it seriously. And then that becomes an even bigger issue because it goes back to the original point that we're trusting 20-something-year-olds, early 30-year-olds mostly, to do something that we've seen 20-somethings not be able to do across the country, which is have some discipline and understand the seriousness of this and do the right thing, wear your mask and socially distance.
So if they have to shut things down, are they able to restart? And then how, you know, at a certain point, I also think that it's going to impact next season. And at one point, do you just kind of call it?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Look, we already are. Yeah, that's a great question. John, do you want to take it first?
No, you know, I'm sorry. I'm so used to hopping into Jake. I'm so like rude to our guests. No, please, Renee.
It's all good.
Please, you're the guest. You go first.
Feng shui here of this
no,
duo.
No, really, I am. Go for it.
No, you're probably actually adding to it and making us less bad.
We're doing a much better podcast so far. So please, you go first.
You know, I think the hard part is we already have seen the schedule push back. Like right now, we should be in the midst of the draft, summer league, free agency. So many things have already been put on the on hold because the season is pushed back. It becomes a question of how far do you continue to move back? If the season has to stop, do you, you know, resume a month later? I mean, at that point, I know Adam Silver and the NBA was talking about having next season start in December, you know, and you know, the draft and everything taking place in October. How much wiggle room do you have? There's only 12 months in a year, and we are already backed in to the next start of the 2020-2021 season. So I think at that point, it depends essentially on when the stop is. But in my opinion, if there's any stop, I think that's it. I don't see the league resuming. I think they just throw in the towel. They finish, you know, they just stop and prepare for next season at that point.
I would tend to agree with Renee there. They have really packed this schedule in. They've eliminated the wiggle room of stoppage versus restart to accommodate the testing positive on the front end. Like they knew players were going to come in testing positive back to their practice facilities. They expect players to come into the bubble potentially testing positive. Some tests that were negative when they left, much like some of the stories that we've heard, but when they arrived, they ended up being positive. It just didn't show up yet. They expect that. So they've accommodated for that by starting this season on July 30th. That means that's it. And they're basically rolling the dice and saying, we're betting that everybody's going to be clean. We're betting on our plan. We're betting on the experts who have helped us with this plan, guiding us to a point here where once we've started, we should not have an outbreak. They really should not have an outbreak because theoretically everyone has tested negative by the time these games start. So theoretically, and this is back to Adam Silver's point, the plan is good, they feel like, but human beings screw up plans all the time. So they are betting the future of this season on there should not be an outbreak. And an outbreak's going to be what shuts this down. So if there is an outbreak, they've exhausted all of their options and they have to stop and just say, we tried, it's over, the draft is next, free agency is next, and we're moving on to next season.
Look, I agree with both of you. At a certain point, they just have to call it, and you can't keep delaying it because it bleeds too much into next year. And at one point do you start damaging the revenue from that season too? You know, a shortened season, which it might have to be, is going to be less money, less eyes on TV. You could potentially shift the calendar and the schedule starting in December, January, what have you. But I don't think they're at that point with it all yet. And then maybe my other biggest takeaway is John does not seem to trust youthful people when it comes to this sort of thing whatsoever, which
I also want them off my lawn.
I was about to ask, like, are you upset when they're on? Look, I just drove through Tuscaloosa where they're having like COVID-19 parties and that terrifies me. Goodness. And I refuse to get out of the car. So I fully get it to an extent. So look, this is the NBA's one shot. They've really, really got to make it work if they want to have more seasons, which is kind of what we're going to talk about coming up here on the next segment of the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Who would you give a 10-year contract to?
Me.
Sign me up. I can play.
So all of us would like that 10-year contract.
We can split it between the three of us, truthfully.
Yeah, we can all share, right? I think that's a great idea. So
I think it's enough.
yeah, I think we'll definitely be okay. So look, let's just roll into it then. So we had the Pat Mahomes deal, $500 million, by the way. It's the first time an NFL player is the highest paid player in like sport, which is kind of, I guess, good for them. But I think John and I are going to be a little bit homerish on this one. So Renee, we're gonna really need you to be like the like neutral third person, because look, if I'm giving a 10-year contract out to anybody, you can convince me of others. I think they're going to kick me out of New Orleans if I don't say Zion. And this dude's only played 19 games.
I mean, that's like legitimately though. That's a legitimate answer.
There's a couple of reasons I think are okay.
I think there are legitimate, like if the Celtics could lock up Jason Tatum for 10 years, they would totally do it. Is he in the first in the list of guys that you would give a 10-year contract to? No, I think Zion's closer to the top of that list.
So I don't actually think Zion's necessarily one. Renee, what would your top three be?
Oh, I was struggling as it was to just pick one. I don't even know if I could pick three. I think in looking at Zion, the hardest thing is the fact there's so much unknown. Yes, we saw him come back. Yes, we saw how he came back. But had he been able to play this entire season up until the pandemic shut down the NBA, I think it might be a different conversation. At this point, I think he's going to be a great player. Don't get me wrong. I just don't have enough to go on. You know, we haven't fully seen how he progressed throughout the season. So I think had the pandemic not shut things down, or had he not been injured at the beginning of the season, he's in that running for sure. You know, the hard part
is... I think that's totally fair, by the way.
I mean, hey, we all have seen how he's been projected to be one of the greatest of all time to ever play basketball. So the sky's... The limit is very high, or the bar is set very high, excuse me, for where he's
projected to be. Screw a 10-year deal, 100-year deal for Zion.
I think the biggest thing is when I compare the deal and look at what Patrick Mahomes brings to the Chiefs, it's more than just what he brings on the field. And I actually was having a conversation with someone earlier this afternoon talking about it. And something that Patrick Mahomes does is he brings revenue to also Kansas City. He's a player that people are out buying his jerseys. They're coming. They want to come see him. You know, besides just being an MVP and a Super Bowl champion, he does a lot more for the franchise as a whole. So I think, in my opinion, a 10-year contract has to be someone that brings all those elements on and off the court. Zion's definitely one of those guys. Don't get me wrong. Still not fully sold, actually. Sorry, guys. But I will say, to me, the next closest would be someone here, like Giannis. Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like I should see myself out now. I feel like Giannis is the next closest. 25 years old. His upswing is huge. We've seen what he does consistently. The only blemish on his mark, on his experience in mark, is the fact that he hasn't been able to come out of the East yet. But I think that Giannis has the potential to be a top player, not only in the league, but one of the top to ever come through the league. So, you know, looking at him and how he's progressing, developing his game from the perimeter, you know, trying to continue to grow as a player in all aspects at 25, 35, you know, I could see that, but I'm not really sold on a lot of people. So I'll let you guys take it. I'm talking in circles, but I'm not fully convinced. I would do a 5-year deal for someone. 10 years is a long time.
10 years is a long time, especially in the NBA. I think Giannis is the number one answer. I think if we're playing Family Feud and we're saying, show me Giannis, he's the number one answer. I would say Luka is probably number two. Mm-hmm. And I would put Zion three behind those two. Just because Giannis and Luka handle the ball, they distribute the ball, they have very dynamic games, and the question marks for Zion are the potential for injury and what's he going to be able to be as far as a guy who handles the ball, distributes the ball, and that kind of stuff. And I only say that because those guys, when you need to get the ball to do what you do, you are reliant on other players to increase your greatness, I should say. Like, you have situations where big guys like Joel Embiid in Philly, where last year Philly had Jimmy Butler as their closer because Joel Embiid can't be the closer. Big guys can't be the closer. Ben Simmons wasn't capable of being that. So you have a guy like Jimmy Butler. Is Zion, for all of his greatness and promise, is he going to become a closer in that sense? I mean, I would say probably, because he's the potential is so limitless, but I still think there are some early question marks that could make 10 years be like, eh, but he's still number three in the list. I would put Jason Tatum somewhere. I'll put him fourth. I think there might be a little homerish
there.
You're
obligated to say that.
But like, yeah. he's also like 21, and he also just spent this past February averaging 30 points a game, and he's shown the ability to not only do a lot of the stuff that I'm saying other guys can do, but also defend at the same time. So I would say Jason Tatum, even if you don't have him fourth like I would, I would still say he's pretty
high in there. You know, I wanted them, the Pelicans to trade Anthony Davis originally, you know, for him. I liked a Celtics package over the Lakers package. And, you know, Ingram on this team right now is the closer over Zion, I think. So I think, you know, those things are fair. I think that's my order is, I think it's Giannis, then Luka, then Zion, which hopefully doesn't get me run out of New Orleans. But I don't think you go wrong with anyone. Let me pose this question. If you were, even the Lakers, let's throw this out as, if you're the Lakers and I go, you can sign LeBron to a relatively team-friendly deal, kind of like how Mahomes actually could end up kind of underpaying him in a way. To a 10-year deal at his current age, you get 4 to 5 years of LeBron at exactly how he's playing now. And then the next 5 years of that, you get 40 to 50% of LeBron. Would you
Are you guaranteeing that you get 4 years of current LeBron?
Yeah. So call it guarantee of 4 years of current LeBron, and then the next six are 40% of LeBron. That all adds up, right?
Sure. I think the Lakers would do it because the Lakers print money. So,
and I'm a big LeBron James fan. So now you guys are talking my language. So that's actually my first thought is LeBron James. I mean, the unfortunate part is the fact that LeBron James is 35 years old. So, but who else could potentially play into their 40s besides LeBron James? So, I mean, honestly, we've seen Vince Carter. We've seen players that have played longer into their career. A 40% LeBron James. That's still very intriguing. You know, it's still a good player and still brings you leadership, still brings a lot to the floor. So again, a 10-year deal is so long. I think LeBron for 7 or 8, absolutely. I mean, I have a feeling LeBron and Bronny are going to be playing in the NBA together for however old LeBron is.
It's not like horribly far from happening right now.
It's not. It's very possible. Only a couple more years. So, you know, I think he's going to stick around for a little while and continue to make history in that sense. So I would put it, a long deal with LeBron. Now, again, 10 is a big number, but had we had this conversation back in 2016, that's without a doubt. I'd definitely put him as my number one, excuse me.
I'd also give Vince Carter on like the vet minimum a 10-year deal, like vet min every year for like 10 more years, Vince, like in a second, I think.
Sure.
I love that.
You could probably still dunk by the end of it.
Probably.
I as far as LeBron goes, as obviously great as he is, potentially the greatest of all time, that once you start getting closer to 40, things change in a hurry. And now LeBron is still playing at such a ridiculously high level for a guy who's 35 that it's hard to imagine a drop off. But I'll just say that the difference between 35 and 37 is significant for anybody, even LeBron James, who may buck this, and maybe I'll sound like I'll be on, you know, freezing cold takes or something. But as you get older as a basketball player, those lower body injuries, those joint injuries, that happens much more quickly and it takes a lot longer. And when you come back from them, they take a lot more out of you. It just gets harder as you get older. So I wouldn't be surprised if, as great as LeBron is, that at some point in the next few years, all of a sudden the slowdown happens suddenly.
No.
Yeah, way to make us all sad here.
Gosh.
Everybody, I'm sorry.
Oh, man. You know, everyone knows I'm a huge LeBron James fan. You know, reporting aside, I'm a LeBron James fan. And so when we came into 2020, that's one of the things that someone said to me was, you know, Renee, this is the year you're going to see LeBron James, the decade, you're going to see LeBron James retire. I'm like, nope, he'll be here. And as we're having this conversation, it's going to happen.
There we go. Let's hope he bucks that trend. Let's hope the NBA bucks the trend that's going on in Florida right now, and we get some basketball and we don't shut things down. And like, let's end on an optimistic note, I think, here. That's what we're all hopeful for. I think that's great. So, Renee, thank you for joining us here. Let them know about Locked On Wizards and where to find you on social media, too, on Twitter.
Absolutely, absolutely. Locked On Wizards will be kicking off next week. We'll be talking all things DC and covering what the Wizards have going on in their return to the NBA as the league resumes. And then you can find me on my pages, of course, Locked On Wizards, at Locked On Wizards at all social media platforms. And then my personal page, at Renee P. Wash on Twitter and at Renee P. Washington on Facebook and Instagram. So, guys, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see what happens with our predictions for the NBA.
Ooh, I hope they go well. So, again, thank you for joining us. This was a lot of fun. I'm sure you'll be all over the network, too. So that's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. On Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales. I am Reds Army underscore John on Twitter, and I host the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening. Tell your smart device to play podcast Rejecting the Screen, exclusively part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And we'll see you all next week.